Heather McDonald has got the juiciest scoop. When you're on the road, when you're on the go, Juicy Scoop is the show to know. She talks Hollywood tales, her real life Mr. Segment Serial Data and Serial Sister. You'll be addicted and addicted fast to the number one tabloid real life podcast. Listen in, listen up. Woo, woo. Heather McDonald, Juicy Scoop.
Hello and welcome to Juicy Scoop. I, as always, have a fabulous show for you today. I'm going to go through some hot topics. Oh my God, updates on things, shows, what happened this weekend. And then also I have a great interview with the writer-producer of the number one show on Netflix in the world, True Story, starring Kevin Hart. Super juicy. And all about Hollywood inside the writer's room. That's all coming. First, let's get into... Wow, Tristan Thompson, really, once again, disappointed the world. Obviously, disappointed Chloe. Who knows when she found out about this. But the news broke, I believe, on Friday that he is expecting a baby with this personal trainer from Texas. She is due in December, so any day now. And they TMZ got the lawsuit and the legal papers that were filed. The baby, according to both of them, was conceived on his birthday when he turned 30 in a Houston hotel room. And he says in this information, he says, yes, I had sex with her, but I only had sex with her twice. I knew her. She said she had a surprise for me. And then the surprise was sex in my hotel room. But we only had it twice. So I don't know how I could have gotten pregnant is the first, how I could have gotten her pregnant is the first thing. And, you know, he has a four-year-old with a former girlfriend. And then, of course, he is True with Chloe. And then as we watch the COVID season of them at this house in Malibu, she talked about how she wanted to give True a sibling. True does have a sibling that boy is four, but give, I guess, a full sibling that would grow up with her full time. And so even though they're not fully together, would he participate in a surrogate carrying their embryo together to give True a full sibling? As of now, we don't know if that baby is in a petri dish, if it's happening at all, if there's a girl that's going to suddenly give birth to that baby. But this woman definitely is claiming this baby is his. She says we dated for 5 months. So that's her story, and that she's having this baby. Now, then a site came out, an Instagram account. It has been pretty much proven to be fake. This is the girl. I don't know if they put her face on somebody else or what, but, you know, it seemed like a real Instagram account. They took her name. They changed, like, one letter in it. And immediately people started following it, including myself. But right away I was like, this is just too crazy, because all of a sudden I'm like, wait, was the baby born? And this account, which is Mara Lee Nicole, posted Angelou Cash with a K Thompson. And first came love, then came you, Angelou Cash Thompson. So I was like, is this fake? You know, what is she trying to say? Well, you know, if someone was like, this is ridiculous, you know, he's with Chloe. Well, they said they weren't together. Who knows what he was telling this girl, by the way. Maybe it did go on for 5 months. Maybe he was love bombing her. Maybe she was told, oh, I just do this for the show and we're completely not together and you're who I'm together with. I don't know. But I think it's for fact that she's having his baby. I don't know that it's been born yet. He's been born yet. And I don't even know that we know that it's a boy. But what was really disturbing was this text that came out that was part of that he supposedly sent to her. That's all part of the lawsuit. So It's pretty disturbing. He wrote to her, "You know how I feel. My feelings haven't changed at all. Won't be involved at all. By the way, if you think having this baby is going to make you some money, you're completely wrong. You are aware that I'm retiring after this season. So in terms of support, it will be whatever is required monthly for someone who is unemployed. It's Texas," since the baby was conceived in Texas, I guess. And she's from Texas. And he wants it to stay in Texas, the case. "It will be only a couple hundred dollars. So you better off taking this $75K I'm offering you, because you won't get nothing near that with having a kid with a father who's unemployed. All you have with," let me see what it says, all you have is a baby with a father who has zero involvement with this child and a few hundred dollars of child support a month." So, I mean, this really just says it all and just terrible and just embarrassing. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if, like I said, I don't know what Chloe's going to do. Chloe is 37. He's only 30. She did post a beautiful post on his birthday. I believe they celebrated his birthday with True Together, and then he admits that he was with this girl at night because he's like fighting this stuff. Just a huge mess. Awful, awful. What a jerk. Don't think he'll be featured that much in the Hulu doc. Will Travis Scott be featured in the Hulu new show of the Kardashians? Interesting, there was an Astroworld documentary on Hulu that was pulled almost the day it came out. And people were wondering, did the Kardashians have something to do with pulling that doc? I researched it a little. It was a doc that was done by a local, kind of a local news company that was there during Astroworld. And mostly, I believe they removed it because there was an onslaught of just regular people who felt it was insensitive or too soon. So, but I do think it's an interesting coincidence that it was Hulu. Okay, so the W Magazine featuring Kylie and Travis Scott, Stormy and a pregnant Kylie, she's having his second baby with him. They were scrambling to get that out of distribution. It was already printed, everything, and then Astroworld happened. A lot of people, some people got a hold of it. You can actually buy it on eBay for $250. But what people gathered from what they found is that it says that they are having a family that, how did they say it? It's a, they're forming their own kind of family. They're like rebranding family, and they aren't together. They have no plans to get married, and they're actually not together. Then Chloe chimed in on some social media comment or something saying, "I don't know why people are saying this. They're very much together." So what is the narrative here? I wonder if when they did this this photo shoot, if they did say that to the people in their interview, like, "No, we're not together in the traditional sense, but we are family." And, you know, I would think, as Kylie being a billionaire and dating Travis Scott and seeing the history of the people like her, from Beyonce to her sisters, that there's a very good chance that this guy that I'm with and the career that he's in statistically is most likely not going to be 100% faithful to me until we're 90. So to keep that humiliation and to be a step above people, instead of presenting like we're the happiest people in the world, and then some girl's going to present some DM or some other girl's going to come out pregnant, I'm just going to say, like, This is where the bar is for the man that I'm choosing to have kids with. This is the bar I chose. This is what I'm doing. I don't want to hear it from any of you all because I chose it. This is who I want to be the father of my kids because of what he brings to my children in my life. I don't care that he's not faithful. So when he's not, don't be writing about me, because I don't care. I created this for myself. This is what I want. I have no desire to marry him either. And then if I meet somebody on a fun girls' weekend, I don't care if you snapshot me making out with someone else, because I never said we were the perfect couple, you know, going to the eternal life together when we're 95. So That's what I think. But then with all this coming out, I think they're trying to say, wait a minute, you know, I'm not just some, you know, quote unquote baby mama situation. We really are a true couple. So I really don't know what they're trying to do here, but it's getting us talking. So, yeah, they're saying, no, they're 100% together, Kylie and Travis. Sources refute the claim that the star couple have not been an item in 2 years. So there you go. Okay. On Friday or Thursday afternoon, I did something that I rarely do, and that I dropped a special short 20-minute interview with a comic whose set was completely disrupted by Real Housewives of New York. Ebony K. Williams came up on stage, took the mic, told him to respect her, even though she was interrupting his act. You can listen to it. I'm not going to recap it. And I got great response from it. People really understood where I'm coming from. But I did want to clear up some of the negative response that I got. Some of you felt that it was telling of the kind of person I am at heart because I came after Ebony and I don't come after hard on Ramona, who's also on The Real Housewives of New York. First of all, I have always shared every awful thing that Ramona has done on the show. That's the only way I know it, okay? And because I haven't witnessed it outside of the show. And I've talked about it a lot. And I've said that I also find her really entertaining. And she's someone that I like to do impressions of. But this, I really was passionate about. Why was I so passionate about it? Because I wasn't just watching it from my couch. It was affecting a career that I've done for 27 years. I was watching a younger person trying to do it. I know how hard it is to get a few minutes on stage and then have it destroyed. What if that guy, Sam, had an agent in the audience? What if this was kind of a big night? What if he was hoping to get a great tape of actual real stand-up that he could now go send to clubs and try to get paid? That is why I was passionate. That is why I wanted people to be aware of how rude this was, also so that they don't do it. And when I say I'm educating you, I mean I'm educating you about going to a place and how to behave. If you've never been to a comedy club before, you might not know the etiquette there. So I'm letting you know, you don't interrupt, you don't talk, you don't take, you know, a bunch of photos of the person, you don't get up, you know, and be disruptive. And if they want to ask you a couple questions and play with you and improv with you, then that's the fun of being in the front row and you have fun with it. And you know that it's a joke and this person is a professional comedian. She since has said, oh, he went out with us after. I don't know what the big deal is. Because remember, I said he went out to dinner with him after, and he said that too. Well, I think he was kind of in shock, and I think he was probably hungry. And it was 2 weeks ago. And when he thought about it, one thing he said was like, you know, Heather, you were the first person that brought up my feelings and how it made me feel and how much it really affected me and how I was like scared to say or do anything because she's a woman of color, and I am a white straight guy. Even though I was on stage and it was my place to command the stage, it's a weird time. And of course, it was being filmed. So anyway, he has let me know that he has been booted by the Housewife Tour. After doing my show, they said, I don't think we really want you to be part of it, which I think is fine. Also, TMZ then reported that Joe Gorga, who has been pursuing stand-up, but not as an opener, not as a host. No, he's been a headliner. And I want to just say, I am all for people trying stand-up. I've talked about doing stand-up a lot. I've said, take classes, go and find another group of people similar at your level, go do open mics together. It is something that you build up to. You start as a host, you become a feature, you work on this act, and it takes many years to get a solid 10 minutes, a solid 20, whatever. Sure, some people move in quicker. You know, some people, it takes a longer time. It is hard when you're famous. You don't have as much of an opportunity to fail, but I don't think going right as a headliner doing 45 to an hour is the way to go. Joe should have done what NeNe did and started just doing a couple minutes here or there and surrounding himself by other really great comics and spending the real time in the comedy clubs. But anyway, he got up there and there's a video of it, and he was bombing. People were talking, and people start talking when you're bombing because it's not holding their interest. He was yelling at them. He was cursing at them. Awful, to the point where Melissa got up and said, you know what? Normally, Joe is so funny, but I don't know what you're doing right now, honey, but you have to go. And she dragged him off stage. And then his people said that he had a cold, so he took a lot of Sudafed and a couple scotches backstage. Joe, don't drink and don't – really? Why, what are you doing going out doing stand-up with a bunch of people when you have a cold? Like, what? Like, let's just talk about the COVID protocol here first, okay? You're breathing, you're spitting on people in, like, COVID time and flu season time. Joe, get a flu shot and, you know, work on it, maybe not in front of so many people. Maybe take some classes, maybe really work on it. But I think it's a little risky when everybody is out there watching you. So there's my advice for that. I love Melissa and Joe. I've met them. I think they're delights. This is all just advice. JoJo Siwa went out to the iHeartRadio show and she had a very sexy outfit on. And it was like, it's like full, it's like this little bow. She did a bow, but then she didn't wear a top under it. And my friend, I think it's from Alice and Olivia. And my friend wrote me, I just bought this outfit. Should I return it now? Because my friend is not 19. And she said, there is a top that goes underneath, under it. And I said, yeah, I think return it. Okay. This is juicy, you guys. They are doing these fabulously packaged advent calendars, Chanel and Dior. And I think it's a really great idea. You've probably seen these advent calendars. If you're not Catholic or Christian, oftentimes it's just candy. And usually your grandmother would get it for you. And every day you'd open it and there'd be a candy. Then people started doing it with little liquors or little nuts or whatever. And so each day you open it, you don't know what you're going to get leading up to Christmas. So Chanel did one. And it's $825. And some people have been doing it on TikTok and whatnot. And it's a hit or miss. And I don't know if it really adds up to $825. But they realized that a lot of the things on it were like giveaways. Like, you know, when you go and you buy Chanel makeup, maybe Chanel lipstick or something. And they're like, oh, if you spend this much, you're going to get this little package or Lancome or whatever. A lot of it was that. What I saw is one was just stickers. Another one was like a little string that you could put like on your dog. One was a little jewelry bag. It's not like you're going to get like a Chanel like earring or even like a real lipstick. I don't know. Maybe there's one. Miniature. They're miniatures. Anyway, it's $825. And then I saw that there was a Dior one as well. And I think that that one is only like $475. So don't expect a lot, but I guess Chanel blocked the girl that was doing it on TikTok, but that doesn't mean she can't do it. So, hey, it might be a kind of a fun trend or create your own, but I don't think it's a wise purchase unless you have a disposable income. Vanderpump Rules, they filmed the reunion on Friday, and it has been completely confirmed that Raquel and DJ James Kennedy, who got engaged on the show this season, she had a beautiful diamond. They are done. They said, we love each other very much, but we are not in love. What she wrote is, after these 5 wonderful years we had together, we decided we have 2 different goals and made the decision to call off the engagement. We love each other very much, but we aren't in love anymore. We want nothing but the best for each other. So please keep your thoughts positive. They are positive, really positive. You're too young. You're too inexperienced. I'm so glad you're not getting married. I like you both. Listen, I hope you broke up on the reunion. It's going to make people watch it. It seems like they're both doing fine with it. And there you go. Did I take that little funny thing? Anyway, someone, Page Six, did a fun little thing of DJ Kennedy's, what his like Bumble or whatever would look like. But yeah, he's adorable and he's single and she's beautiful. So they're going to be fine. Real Housewives of Salt Lake City is just getting weirder and weirder. And I have to say, last night's episode, I thoroughly enjoyed for a number of reasons. I thought, you guys know I've never liked Jen, okay? Jen Shaw. Jen Shaw, they did, as you know, I did The Housewife and The Hustler. That was a ABC primetime Hulu doc that I was part of about Erica Jane. Then they did another one about Jen Shah. I'll be honest, I have not taken the time to watch it. But what I've heard from a lot of people, including my sister Shannon, is that there was not a lot of information from it. She's like, I don't even know why they brought it out. And it was because of that doc that Jen Shah's defense team said, we want this whole trial thrown out because we feel like this doc will have tainted any kind of jury. Well, the judge was like, no, because even Heather McDonald didn't watch it. So we're going to go forward. Thank you, judge. But I have to say, from like what I've heard and stuff, I don't think it hurt her. If anything, it made people go, I don't know that what she did was, that bad, because it's like they had people that had suffered a similar crime, but they weren't her victims. I don't know. So a lot of people said, don't waste the hour. Also, House of Gucci. A lot of people said they're never going to get that 2 hours and 40 minutes back. I will tell you the things to watch, and a show to watch to just put a smile on your face. I've mentioned it before. There's two seasons of it. HBO Max, the other two. My friend Guy Branum is a supervising producer on it. I love so many things about it. It is so freaking hilarious. It is kind of inside Hollywood funny, but it's SNL writers. It's some of the most clever stuff I've ever seen. Molly Shannon, unbelievably hilarious. It is edgy, so make sure if you're watching it with your kids that they're like at least like 17 or whatever, because there is some like pretty edgy sex stuff, but I love it. Thought it is hilarious. That is worth your time, okay? Now, so Boredom by Bravo, hilarious meme account. Love this girl. She made one, The Housewife and The Cosby Cult. Mary Cosby is another Real Housewife of Salt Lake City, and they go after her in the latest episode because a guy comes to one of the girls and says, beware of Mary. Basically, she guilt you so bad that we gave that I sold my house and I gave her $300,000, or I pulled out $300,000 from my house. He has since died of a brain cancer. Sad thing. The person that we see on the show is no longer with us. She says, this is bullshit. And then Meredith is like, Mary's been nothing nice to me. I don't even know what traumatic religious trauma means, but I'm not going to engage in talk about someone who has a business and a church. I just want to say, people, I will say, I think this is the era of just opening it up and going, why the hell am I blindly going to some weird person's church that has no charities? It's not like she's doing houses in Mexico for little kids. Like, what is this church? It's just her dressed up to the nines, screaming at people. There's tapes of her saying, you didn't give me enough money. She goes on to say, I don't need any money. I inherited my money by marrying my step-grandfather because my mom already established this corrupt church. And my mom disowned me because she wanted to marry him and have the church. I married him. Now I have the church. And she literally brings everybody this incredible gifts to like buy their silence on this trip. So Lisa Barlow is like, I think this is weird. But then she goes right to Mary and she goes, listen, I'm going to tell you right now, I talked to Cameron. I think it's strange that he gave $300,000 to you. She says, it's not true. It's not true. By the way, here is this whatever, $1,700 Chanel clutch. Then they go over and they knock on Heather's door in the middle of the night and she presents her with a $5,700 Louis Vuitton purse. In the morning, she goes over to the new girl, Jen, and says, thank you for doing my makeup. Here are some $1,700 Christian Louboutin sparkly booties that I just said you can have. And that was wrapped. And then who's the other girl in the cast? The only person that didn't get anything is Whitney, because she doesn't like Whitney because Whitney didn't call her back in time when she's taking her kids to like soccer or whatever. So she doesn't like Whitney. Everybody else got a gift between $1,500 and $5,700. And Whitney's like, this is just bullshit. And then Heather goes, who also, she got the most expensive purse, goes, Yeah, this is starting to kind of feel gross to me too. She's like, look, I would have let this weird church stuff slide, but now that Jen got arrested in front of my beauty lab, you know, filler place, I'm still shaking in my boots, and now I want to ask, because now I'm on the show with two people. One is a cult, possible cult leader, and another person scammed old people and vulnerable people in society. So, like, let me ask some freaking questions. And maybe the first question I need to ask is myself. And I don't think I want to go on this private jet home with you. And Whitney goes, neither do I. And I have to say, I think the two of them in the history of Housewives showed the most moral character to not get in a car, hop on a private jet. They had to sit on a stool, on a step, looking for flights hours in the future. They're going to have to go on coach. Their flight could be canceled. They're risking it. She did say, I want my purse back. I don't know if she gave her back the purse to Mary. But Heather and Whitney, I have a lot of respect for. I have to say, I don't know what I would do. First of all, I'd be happy to give the purse back, but I do think I'd want to get on the flight. I mean, the flight's going no matter what. The environment already is suffering from you taking a private jet. Maybe I could do more good if I got home sooner and exposing this weird cult. That's how I probably would have justified getting on the plane. So there you go. Speaking of Salt Lake City, you guys, and Park City, Utah, I have some very exciting news. You may recall that I've had a bucket list of things that I want to do. And I said, I can't believe I've never been to Sundance. I used to read about it in People magazine from when I was, 15 years old. Well, I'm going. I don't know. I have no plans except that I booked a place. Peter and I are going. I would love to see some films. I'd love to go to some cool events. If you are going to be there during Sundance, email me, DM me. Well, actually, just email me, because sometimes I don't feel like I get every DM. Email me at therealheathermcdonald@gmail.com. Let's make some memories happen in Sundance. And maybe I'll see a couple of these girls. One thing I won't be doing is going to Mary's cult church. And please, people, like, what are you thinking being part of these weird churches? Underboob. I told you, underboob cleavage is, I mean, the amount of predictions that have come true in just this year that I have said, seriously a trend. There are now bras, bras that are under wire. So, and then just the underboob, it's like, so you have an underboob cleavage and a top cleavage. That's going to really get some guys horny, and Adore Me is the first to make it. So congrats. Let me give you a little update on the craziest Ghislaine Maxwell trial. You guys, there's so much to uncover. I've talked a lot about it. Watch the documentaries. Learn about her weird, privileged, strange childhood, her weird relationship with her weird father, how she ended up with Epstein. But let me just tell you what's going on in the trial right now. Some of her siblings, she's one of nine. She's the youngest of nine. Some of her siblings have been spotted coming to court supporting her. Also, when the sketch artist started to draw her, she got a piece of paper and started drawing the sketch artist, which was very creepy. So then the sketch artist drew her drawing her, okay? I'm going to give you an update from the New York Post. This is the easiest way I can get this update. So there is this woman testifying under the pseudonym Kate. She took the stand Monday, and the witnesses, she was above the age of consent when she met Maxwell and Epstein. So just know that. But because of her age, prosecutors will not be allowed to ask her questions about the details of sexual contact between Kate and Epstein. But she testified that she met Maxwell in Paris in the early 1990s when she was 17 years old. The witness identified as Kate also said that she was led up to a massage room in Maxwell's London townhouse by the accused madam, Ghislaine, and then gave Epstein a sexualized massage when she was 17. Maxwell told Kate to have a good time after she opened the massage room door and revealed a naked Epstein before one of the sessions. After the massage, which included sex acts with Epstein, Maxwell told Kate that she was a good girl and that she was so happy that she was able to come. And she said that Ghislaine seemed very pleased with what had happened. Kate also testified that Ghislaine spoke about her friendships with celebrities, including Prince Andrew and former President Donald Trump. Recall from my interview with Carol Radswell, shortly after Carol's husband died, Ghislaine, who she met at one event, contacted her while she was in London and said, you know, Prince Andrew would love to take you out. Do you have plans tonight? And Carol was all alone, and they went on two dates. Nothing happened, but she is a connector of socialites and people above age. And according to this trial and according to the prosecution and all this evidence, younger people too. And that is what she also did for her father. She kind of was this socialite that, like, was always introducing people like a hostess. That's really been her whole career. So find that very interesting. The assistant U.S. attorney asked Kate, the witness, about her social circle, in which she responded that she seemed to know everybody. She was friends with Prince Andrew, Donald Trump. Sometimes the names would just come up as she would be talking on the phone about them with me, and I would be present. Kate is not a victim of the charges in the indictment because she said on the stand that she was led by Maxwell to give Epstein sexualized massages at the accused madam's London apartment when she was 17. I don't know why they are saying she's not a victim. I don't understand this. She was 17. I don't understand that part.
She's not calling herself a victim.
So Ghislaine and Jeffrey gave a woman a schoolgirl outfit at his Palm Beach mansion. This is also, and requested that she serve him tea while wearing the costume. The witness identified the same girl, Kate, said that the pleated skirt, the white socks, and the shirt were laid out on the bed when she arrived at the mansion with the duo in the early 1990s. And I thought it would be fun for you to take. She said, Ghislaine said this, take this to Jeffrey with his tea. And then when she gave her a tray, and then they later engaged in sex acts with when she gave him the tea near his pool, she testified. So but her defense is attacking this woman, Kate's credibility. They're saying that they said, why are you using a pseudonym, Kate, when you have made numerous public statements with your real name, but now you're testifying anonymously? So they're going after her for that. And then they had a lunch break. And then they also asked Kate repeatedly if she was seeking a visa from the U.S. government that would be bolstered through her cooperation with the case. So the defense is trying to say, the only reason you're here is because you're not American, and by cooperating with the prosecution, you're hoping to get this visa. But Kate said no, that she denied that she was seeking the immigration status known as a U visa, and instead said she plans to remain on her current visa, which is given to immigrants with extraordinary ability. I think that means if you're an actor or a, you know, something that you do something special that not everybody can do. And she is a model and an actress. So I think that's how she got that visa. There you go. Also, update, Alec Baldwin did an interview where it seemed like he was very coached by his attorneys in explaining what happened. And it was with George Stafalopoulos, you know, I don't know how to say his name. And there were the two important things that he said in that interview, if you didn't see it, was, you know, you feel for him, but one thing, you know, he was you felt horrible for what he's been through. But what he tried to get across, Alec, was there was one person who's responsible for this accident. One person. So that removes him, that removes the other producers, that removes the studio people. It's one person. And that is the head of the armory prop department. Okay, so he made that very clear. And then it was interesting because then they brought up this interview that someone recently had with George Clooney, where George Clooney says, I've worked with guns on more movies than I can count. And anytime I'm going to shoot a gun, not only does the person show me and check it before handing me, but I always check it and make sure that there's nothing in it. So they said, now, how do you feel, Alec, that George Clooney is saying the opposite of what you're saying that every actor in this situation knows to check it himself? he said, well, everybody has an opinion about this case and wants to get their 2 cents in or something. It wasn't great. He and his wife then deleted their Twitter accounts, but then people say they always delete them. I haven't checked if she's posted cute, funny things about her kids using the F word today or not. But there you go. It didn't turn out great. I think at first people thought it did, and then when people started to pick it apart and bring up some of these points that I'm bringing up, they were like, maybe it wasn't so great. I just started watching Coming Out Colton. I'm an episode and a half in. And basically, the first episode is him just telling everybody in his life, his mom, his brother, his best girlfriend, like platonic girlfriend from high school. She seemed the least surprised. And then... and his dad. And the last one was the dad. And they go fishing, and then he goes, so dad, I have something to tell you. And then he says, I'm coming out, I'm gay. And the dad's like, everyone had a great response. Everybody said, we love you. You know, all of them were shocked except for the best girlfriend. And so the dad is, you know, that has talked to the cameras and was just like, you know, I'm just a little bit surprised. I don't, you know, they're being careful. There's cameras on them. But all I could think about is, what did he tell the whole family when he goes, by the way, I got another TV show. Cameras are going to be following me. What did he tell them so that they wouldn't think it was a show about coming out? He had must have told. So I'm like waiting for, I just want to get the interview with the dad who's like, so we're not flipping houses in Colorado? Like, what was the story that he told? Like, hey, dad, we're going to put together a porch. It's called Father. Like, what was his story that he said that he got a whole nother show and we're going to be mic'd up and all this again? And then, surprise, I'm gay. That's what the show is about. So then he goes a lot of football talk. He goes to like, goes plays golf with these other older football people that came out as gay. It is a really important message, but as a TV executive mind, if I'm putting my, I'm not interested in seeing all the football stuff. I'm not. Like, get to him dating. He says, I like daddies. We get one juicy thing. He goes, I like older guys that are daddies. Well, he found one. And he posted about this guy being his boyfriend. It's his birthday. He says he's corn-fed. He loves dogs. He is 38, so he's not that much older than Colton. I think Colton's like 30-something. But he looks older. And they kind of look alike, which is why I sort of like daddy relationships, because oftentimes I thought two guys were in a gay daddy relationship, and then it was just a father and son. So 29, 38. That's not as much of his daddy as he thought, but I don't know how that makes his real dad feel. Also, this guy that he's with is big in the Democratic Party in fundraising. He's very well connected. And so I wonder if the dad is more upset that he's dating a Democrat than that he's dating that he's gay. Who knows? Anyway, it's a good message. I don't know how much more I'm going to watch of it. I'll be totally honest. But I love that people were predicting. I said, is he going to try stand-up? Maybe next season, Justin Martindale can help him do stand-up. I think other things are going to be, let's fix your clothes. Let's, you know, go over your grooming, like a little like mini Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. I predict, you know, speed dating. I'm going to give you some tips and put something in your ear. I think we're going to use everything short of him hopping on a stripper pole. And maybe that too. Like, I just feel like we're going to see every cliche reality show kind of thing. You know, a shaman's going to come in. I don't know. We're going to see it all. What? Oh, I'm sure they're going to go to lots of prides. Anyway, that's what I think. But he is good looking. Guys, I'm coming to the Improv February 4th, 5th. And on the 5th, there's two shows, 7 and 9:45. New stuff, new stories, always fresh topics that I get into in my stand-up, very pop culture related, and juicy stories from my own life that I don't tell anywhere, including Patreon. I will see you at the Tempe Improv. I told you guys to watch this show, True Story, and you did. And I'm so excited to bring on my friend who is one of the writers and producers on it. Please welcome a legend in the industry, also worked on the first TV show I've ever been on, Devon Shepherd. Hello and welcome to Juicy Scoop. I am with a very old friend. In fact, not old, but we both are kind of old now. But I met you on one of my very first jobs, mm-hmm. Devon Shepherd, writer, producer. I slightly mentioned this show on Tuesday, which is True Story, Kevin Hart. Is it six episodes?
It's seven.
Seven episodes. Seven. I watched it all on Saturday night on Netflix. So juicy. This is a juicy scoop assignment. And then I was, during one of them, I saw your name. And I'm like, I wonder if he's on Instagram. And then I hit you up. And days later.
Here I am.
Cleared your schedule.
I did.
To come and be a juicy scooper. And I also love that you and your wife are Housewives fans. So we're going to get your opinions on some of that juice. But I, you've done so many different shows. Mm-hmm. Lyricist Lounge being one, that's where I met you. Yeah. And I've talked about that a little bit. It's so random. Once in a while, someone will be like, I remember you from Lyricist Lounge.
Really?
I'm like, holy shit. That was,
wow.
That was over 20 years ago.
Oh my God.
And was I always say that show was ahead of its time.
It was.
But then nothing's really come of nothing. It was so unique, really. To describe it, it was sketch, but it was with these rappers that would like rap an entire sketch or a story. It was mm-hmm. so clever. Mm-hmm. And I think in creating the show, they found them first. And then they were like, well, let's bring some other comedians to kind of fill it out. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we'd have a straight sketch. And then other times, like I had a tiny part in like one of the more musical ones. Like we had the Snoop one, which was like a bank robbery or something.
I was going to say, that was my favorite one.
That one was really good.
That shit was good. The bank robbery one? Jesus, that was good.
And we had like DeBrat on one where she was like in a baby. I mean, we did like a lot. Yeah. So it was kind of a big deal. And I wish I would have like utilized, because I remember like right away I went to like a movie theater and people like recognized me. And I'm like, I should have been right off the bat like utilizing that little, because we didn't have social media or anything to like out the bits and the video. So then once like the show ended after two seasons, it was just kind of like, who remembers that? YouTube wasn't even around back then.
Damn.
So some people have put it back on YouTube.
She laughs. We are old shit.
I remember when I first heard about YouTube because I was with the Waynes and one of the nephews was like, you got to get on YouTube. You haven't heard of what YouTube is? And I'm like, what's this face?
Kidding. YouTube.
What are you talking about? yes. So you were doing that, but you were you running that show or just writing that show?
I was running that show.
Okay. Yeah.
I ran the pilot, and then I didn't stay for the series.
Oh, okay.
So I did the casting and did all that with Claude.
Yeah.
We did the pilot.
Because Tracy and I came in after you already cast our parts.
Did you?
Yes, because Allison Faust.
That's my dog.
Still, I love her.
That's my dog.
Oh, my God. I watch her granddaughter, everything.
Oh, right?
We had worked on Kenan's late night show together.
That's right.
And she's like, hey, I'm working on this show, and they need a funny white girl. And the girl they chose, I just said, well, my friend is funnier than her. And she's like, she's not working out. And she tells me the show, and I go, I couldn't get an audition for that show. They wouldn't see me.
Really?
Yeah. And so then I'm like, it just goes to show you how sometimes something works.
Yeah.
And I always say when people say like, the casting couch, I go, no, the way to get on TV is through the writer's room.
Yes.
Know the writer, be the writer, whatever. It's through the writer's room. It's not boning anybody.
That's an exclusive, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah.
Know the writers. Because the writers could write you the part, and the writers could say, this is who's good for the part. And the other part is, no one wants to search for it. So if someone's like, I know this exact right person for this thing, everyone's like, good, done.
Yeah.
I don't want to run a casting with 25
people
today.
Yeah, everybody will
bring her
in. Yeah. So many times I've been, let me call my friend real quick. I've done that so many times in the room.
Right, yeah.
Like, so.
Yes. So then, the black girl they had, I remember everything. She thought it was offensive, the material.
Really?
And she was like, I think she thought she was going to be like a bigger actress, and she thought it was sort of beneath her.
Oh, I know who it was. I remember who it was.
Is she a huge deal now?
No.
Because for a minute, I got it, and we were working together. And then the next day, she's like, I'm out. And then they're like, Sarah, who else are we going to get? And then Tracy's name came up.
Yes, that's how we ended up with Tracy.
Yeah.
That's how we ended with Tracy.
And I was like, oh, I just read an article about her in a magazine. So I was like all excited. And then we hit it off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She, Sarah something is her last name. She ended up doing Broadway.
Oh, okay.
She did okay. But I remember the sketch she got mad about. It was a sketch I wrote.
Mm.
It was the Erykah Badu talk show. And the joke was, because remember Erykah wore the big head wraps.
Yeah, yeah.
So the sidekick was inside her head wrap.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So he would open up and like make jokes and then go back into her head wrap. And she, for some reason, she thought it was offensive.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's funny. And we went back and forth and she was like, no, I can't do it. I was like, all right.
But when you look it back, okay, now let's talk about that.
Let's talk.
So if that sketch was on a show today.
It'd be harmless.
It'd be harmless, you think.
It'd be harmless.
But what if a white person wrote that sketch today? Then people would be like, you're making fun of a black person's hair.
No.
I think that's what you, I know, I don't think so, but I'm saying I think that's what, not everybody.
Right.
It's not everybody. It's 10 people with a Twitter account. It's
right.
Where everybody's like, everybody, I'm like, nobody's being like literally arrested and thrown in jail.
Right.
You just have to deal with some shit on social media. So you either can fight it, take it, whatever.
Yeah, but
on
I'm not
a show
with
where
shit.
There are sponsors and stuff,
yeah.
Then bigger shows do have to be really
they
careful.
They have to at least listen to the complaints.
Yes, yes, yes.
We came up in a time where we didn't give a fuck about the complaints.
I don't think people knew how to give us the complaints.
Right, even,
you'd have to get a stamp and a letter. Like,
dear Lyricist Lounge.
Yeah, like there's no way to right. it wasn't 2 seconds of your life
right.
where I mean look how quickly I found you, you know.
Yeah.
I if I wanted to write something mean to you, I could have done that
you
too.
Done it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's right there.
And when I did I hate true story. Yeah.
I did Mad TV and I remember and that was when what was it? It was AOA, it was something, and people were sending us I had wrote this sketch and people were sending emails or something. It wasn't like we didn't have a platform. I can't remember what it was now. I just remember getting a book with all these complaints.
Oh, printed out emails.
Printed out and all these complaints. And we would just sit through and go through and laugh at them and go, we're going to make something worse next week. So I don't know why you're wasting your time. And I remember when Married with Children, remember the woman wrote Fox about Married with Children.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Wanted coke and all in there and to cancel the show. And because she did it, it made the show hotter. Because
yes.
People were like, well, what is this horrible show this woman's talking about? You tune in, like, I fucking love Al Bundy. And the show became a hit.
Yeah.
So that's the different times.
What do you think about, I just saw this, I think the Shade Room or someone posted this, about Dave Chappelle is set to get his, I guess he went to a high school for the arts, for the kids, performing arts. And they're going to put his name on one of the big performing arts building. And people are fighting against it. Mm-hmm. And he said, that's fine, but the haters better raise as much money as the supporters did to get this beautiful building built.
Right.
What do you think of the whole, I saw the special, I thought it was great.
I thought it was great.
And but like I said, I think people have the right to say you don't like it. But I don't think people have the right to have things removed. Like, well, you're okay. You've spread it that you don't think people should waste their time watching something you don't like. Okay.
Right. But who are you to say people shouldn't waste your time? Who says I'm not wasting my time?
But
I like Dave Chappelle.
I like
so it wasn't a waste for me.
Right. But I'm saying the people that hate it, though,
right.
You also have the freedom to go and say, don't watch it. So why are you trying to say take away his freedom to do it for the people that do want? Like, it's all about, but so it's like, I was just on a radio show this morning for my friend, and he posts a photo, and people like me when I'm a guest on his show, Jeff Lewis Live.
Uh-huh.
But some people hate me. And I almost look forward to looking on his page to see who hates me. Because then whoever says, I'm so sick of that old hag. She thinks she's so great. She called herself the female Joe Rogan, which I've never said. Why would I say that? Anyway, I think I've said I'd like to be like that.
Right.
But anyway, so I was like, oh, her name's Polly, whatever. And I went and I blocked her. So I'm like, she didn't even put it on my comment. But I'm like, she doesn't need to see my Instagram anymore.
Right. But some people.
You don't enjoy me? Goodbye.
I think hate is the new love.
Well, it takes energy.
It takes a lot of energy to hate somebody. Especially somebody you don't even fucking know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know how much research you got to do and dive into people's shit to really hate someone properly, that's a lot of fucking work.
Yeah, yeah.
So I go, if you want to go through the painstaking, arduous task of hating me, God damn it, hate me.
Yeah.
I enjoy it. I don't get hate mail anyway or anything like that, but I just think it's fucking silly.
Yeah.
I do. I think as adults, we're reverting back to high school in a big way.
Yeah.
Just a big, gigantic high school. I don't like you. Yeah, I don't like her either. You don't like her? Yeah, let's form an I Hate Heather club. And now everybody just, and half the time, they really don't even know why they don't like you.
Yeah.
A lot of it is just cap. I remember I was looking at, I think it was Kevin Hart's page. And somebody just said some shitty thing to Kevin Hart. And Kevin Hart said, hey, that's okay. I'm fine. And he said, oh, I just wanted you to respond. Thank you. So some of that is just desperation to get attention.
Yeah.
So, which is all fucking sick at the end of the day.
Yes.
You know, right? Attention for what? You know, so I don't subscribe to any of that. I just do my thing. I'm from the old school. I came out where everybody was funny. People said crazy shit. If it was, to me, if it's funny, it ain't racist.
Right. That's funny.
You know what I'm saying? If I can let go shit, that's a good joke. And I'm laughing. All right.
Yeah.
You know, hey, hats off. You know when a joke is racist.
Right.
You know what I mean? You know when a joke is set out there to not make people laugh, but to really hurt somebody.
Yeah.
You can distinguish between the two.
Right.
Right? But if somebody craft a funny fucking joke, they're not doing it to be racist. They're doing it to be funny.
Yes.
Now, it may hit. It may not hit. But it's never the interpretation for it to be hateful. You know, like we do these HR meetings at work, right? We always got to have the person come in and talk to us about sexual harassment. And I think all of that's real.
Right.
But when you're in a fucking writer's room, let's take it into context.
Yeah.
We're in here trying to make each other laugh. I'm not on those soapbox going, women shouldn't have the right to vote and shouldn't have control of their fucking bodies. I'm not doing that bullshit. I'm making a joke.
Yeah.
So the worst thing you could say to me is my joke wasn't funny. That's it. And you know, writers, if your joke isn't funny, they kill you.
Yes.
They attack you.
Well, I always remember the, you know, because it's true like that, my first writers room were a diverse group of people, of men and women and black and white and everything and Jewish and Christian and like, and it was just so fun.
Right.
And it was so like, oh, I want to hear like what your point of view was of like my point of view of watching a show like Good Times. Right. I remember like Keenan being like, what did you think of that show? And I'm like, oh, I just loved it. And I'm like, what do you mean? What did I go? I just said, oh, I wish our neighbors lived so close to us. And he just thought that was hilarious because I never even realized that the show was about people in the projects or whatever. I just thought it was about families that lived in this building together, and I just thought they were hilarious. And I remember thinking it was unfair that the girl got her own room and the boys had to share that couch.
You thought that was unfair?
I thought that was unfair.
Really?
I said, there's two of them and only one of her. Nah, why does she get her own
baby
room?
Baby girl, the girls got to get the room. They need the privacy. Like, you know.
And I was just like, oh, that's it. Like, those were the thing. Like, it just, that's sort of interesting because it's like, Your worldview will then be different, a different perspective on other things. And I just thought that was so, and then like when everybody just had to dissect it so much in these last couple of years, I'm like, you're just sort of killing people and the interest.
Right.
Like now I'm like, now people are afraid to ask a question because the question might appear insensitive or something. And it's like, well, how am I ever going to get to know something different about you because we didn't grow up the same? And, you know, so it's like your life experience is different than mine. I want to hear about it. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I think that's sort of that was kind of a bummer. And the good things that came out of the last couple of years, that part I was like, now there's going to be less of a connection because people are going to almost be afraid to connect.
Yeah, people
afraid because they're
going to talk.
Afraid they're going to say the wrong thing. And, you know, and people do say the wrong thing, but, it's like,
it's, I don't know. I think it's all contextual. Like,
I'm running
a room now for Showtime for Flatbush Misdemeanors, right? And
what's it called?
Flatbush Misdemeanors.
Is that a series or a movie?
Series.
Oh, okay.
They're in the second season. I came in second season. And we have a diverse group of people. And our whole thing is like, let's just be fucking funny.
Yeah.
I ask people questions. They ask me questions. We don't give a shit. Like,
yeah.
Because it's the context. It's not like we on the corner, I'm in line for a burger, and you ask me, you know, so black people. And I'm like, hey, I'm getting a burger. Like, what the fuck? Like, we're in. I'm in a writer's room.
Yeah.
And so in order to write, you have to share experiences.
Yes.
You have to share perspectives and point of views. That's where a lot of the humor comes from. I mean, we did this episode on The Neighborhood when I wrote on The Neighborhood. And we found out that white people, at least this is what we were told, didn't use towels in the shower, like hand wash towels. They shower with just their hands.
Yes, that's true.
And see, that's fucking bizarre to black people.
You mean like the little hand towels?
Yeah, the little hand towel. You put soap and you.
Oh, like a washcloth.
Washcloth, yeah.
Yeah, no, not really.
Yeah, and so for us,
yeah,
if we're raised to wash your ass with a washcloth and soap.
Yeah.
Like, get in there and get it. So when you go, wait a minute. So it became this really fun discussion that turned into a really funny episode.
Yeah, yeah.
About, you know, Cedric and his wife and the white neighbors and I think it was the second episode, and they were learning about each other, and she happened to see that, and that created this whole discussion.
Yes.
And it opened it up even deeper, right?
Yeah.
But it was a fun way in.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you don't use washcloths? Like, how do you clean yourself? I use my hand. Like, where in my head go, how the fuck you absorb this, like, it's mind-boggling us. Like, I just was in a hotel this weekend. You know how many fucking towels we use? Our shit was like this. They damn near charged us. Our shit was, they almost always take them home. Like, just take those with you. Because we, black folks use towels.
Right, well, I just was performing and in Atlanta at the City Winery, and they have mostly musicians there.
Uh-huh.
And the girl that was running the whole thing, she was fabulous, but she put a big white towel out there for me. And I go, what do you think I'm doing with this towel? You think I'm like sweating? But I was like, oh, but yeah, other people and musicians and stuff use these towels. I'm like, no, I'm going to be fine. Like, I'm not doing a dance routine. Like, I'm just like, but it's funny that, and you're right. It's just like a weird thing that you just don't. I remember just working with the Waynes about eating off other people's plates.
Yeah,
yes. White people will eat off other people's plates. Yeah. Like, literally, yeah, I'll take my fork. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, I think I did that to someone. And they're like, what the fuck? I'm like, oh, you don't want to just like splitsky share or whatever? And they're like, no. And then we had a discussion about that. Like, no, this is my food.
Right.
And there was a whole funny thing on TikTok of people bringing their spouse of a different race. So either a guy, he's like, here's my white girlfriend going to a black Thanksgiving,
right,
and then raiding the food, and then the girl bringing her black boyfriend to the white food, and you know, what was good and what wasn't so good and what wasn't. And I'm like, this is so cute. Like, this is, I love this.
But it's
so
fun.
Funny.
It's funny. It's not to be, it's to me, it's that's how you get to know who people are.
Right.
Well, the cultures are about who should make the potato salad. That's where you learn all that shit.
Yeah.
You don't go through it, you're not gonna learn. Don't eat Aunt Viv's chicken. It ain't seasoned properly.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? So for me, I just think, you know, we just got to a place of such divisiveness that we're not really embracing the differences. That's what makes us fucking great.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You don't have these stories that we tell, these jokes that we tell, the perspectives that we have without interaction.
Yeah.
We just don't have them. If we don't have, we're just fucking robots at this time, walking around trying not to be offensive. I can't live like that.
Yeah.
I want to be offensive.
I know.
It's fun to be offensive.
But it's also great to get to a place, you know, in your career where you're like, oh, hey, you know, this job or this thing isn't going to change my lifestyle. So it's not working for me. See ya.
Right.
And that's really, really freeing. And, you know, and there's times earlier in your career where, you know, maybe you didn't have that freedom and you're like, ugh, whatever. Let me write this watered down piece of poo.
Yeah. Let me write this piece of shit. His mortgage is due.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So I've always been that way though. I never let the, I like writing, but I never let the money motivate me. Because once you get addicted to the money, you're stuck.
Yeah.
So I go, let me just have the love of the craft. So I write whether I'm getting paid or not. To this day, I still do that. If I got a great idea, I don't wait for somebody. I just go write it.
Yeah.
And I just sit on the shelf. It's for me. And then when somebody say, hey, I need a romantic comedy. Well, let me look here. Got one
for
you. Really? Yeah.
I'm so jealous that you are just, so you're absolutely not a procrastinator at all.
Nah, not at all.
Ugh.
Not at all. But I like it. So it's never about money for me. I walk off. Listen, my wife, I was about to walk off the job I'm on now. My wife goes, you walk off so many jobs. And I go, because I don't have to do the shit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, right. I love what I do, but I'm not motivated to do it for money. And I'm about my sanity and peace. You know what I mean? My line has always been, I tell my kids this. You can lose everything except your, you can lose anything and get it back except your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Once your mind goes, you can't get it back. There's no reset button, no restart button. Can't get it back. So I always tell people I'm around, my kids, protect your sanity. If shit ain't right, it don't feel good, don't try to understand it. Just politely walk away.
That's great advice.
You know?
For relationships, friendships.
Everything.
Yeah.
Everything. If it doesn't make sense, if, because what we try to do is put square pegs in round holes to try to make shit make sense. And next thing you know, you just bought into some bullshit. Now that becomes the way you think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I didn't want my kids buying into no bullshit. Have your own mind, have your own perspective, stay true to that, be honest, be good people, and keep pushing. That's it.
So how long have you been married?
17 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm 21. And how old are your kids?
21, 16, and 10.
Okay, so you've got the whole
gamut. I got the whole gamut.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, mine are 22, 19, and 15.
Oh, wow. One more to go. Get them out of the house, huh? I'm waiting for that. I'm waiting for that.
Well, I know, like, I kind of, like, sometimes I forget we still have one left because I'm like, oh, we'll go do this or whatever. Right. And I'm like, well, wait, Brandon still has to get to school. Shit. Like, I'm like, okay, you know.
Well, you can Uber. I can get him.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, because it's, yeah, it's, that's nice, though. Where do you guys live?
Chatsworth. I'm like literally.
Oh, this is good. It worked out for you. 20
minutes from here. Yeah.
That worked out for you.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's get into True Story.
Let's get into it.
So I saw Kevin do a couple interviews when I was on the road, and I was like, oh, you know, and what all I knew about it was it's scripted. He had a scripted idea and then brought it to Netflix and then came up, built the idea and wrote it with a bunch of other people. So I thought it was a movie. And so then I start watching it and I go, and I knew there was, he's like, it's dark. It's, you know, it's a serious role. It's dark something. So I'm like, ooh, I think I'll like this because, you know. And I was like, oh, my God, this movie has everything I love. Okay, so he's a comedian.
Yep.
There's a Hollywood element. He's playing a version of himself. He has a fucked up sibling. Can relate to that. And and then this juicy crime happens.
Right.
And, you know, and I'm not giving it away, though I do hope you guys watch it because I'm going to give a little bit away. But so how did you come into helping write the story of it?
Eric Newman wrote the pilot, but Charles Murray ran the show.
Okay.
Charles Murray is one of my dearest best friends. And he called me and said, hey, come co-run this show with me. And he's like, it's Kevin doing a drama. And we started laughing. Because I was like, I was like, you're supposed to be selling me. He goes, I know. Every time I say it, it sounds funny. And he told me what the idea was. And I said, Kevin really is going to do that. And he's like, yeah. I'm like, fuck it, I'm in.
I love it because I think every comedian, like always, I'm like, you know, you if you're a comedian, comedians only, if they ever win an Oscar, it's only for best supporting in like a comedy role.
Right.
And you know, and like except for like a couple of people, like a Jim Carrey or whatever.
Right.
And like I remember Marlon was always talking about when I was working on stuff with him that he wanted to do the Richard Pryor story.
Yep.
And I was always like, oh my God, that would be so good. I still don't. And then I interviewed Richard Pryor's son, and there's so much with the estate.
Yeah.
That is what's always holding, and the ex-wife Jennifer. That's what's holding up. The story that really would be amazing to be
told.
They're
doing it now.
They are doing it now. Who's playing him?
It used to be Mike Epps.
Oh, okay.
I know Kenya's directing it. Kenya Barris is directing it.
That'll be good.
But I don't know who they have the star in it. Now, I saw Marlon's audition tape, which was really good, which is how he got into comedy. Doing stand-up. Because he went to do research, and he fell in love with the art. So when it fell, you know, when the movie fell apart, he just kept doing stand up.
Oh, because Marlon really hadn't done stand up because he went right into sketch with with
Sean and all that.
Right, with the Wayans Brothers show on Warner Brothers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the WB show. Yep. Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
So the stand-up kind of came after.
I could be wrong. I don't think he was even interested in doing stand-up.
I don't remember him doing stand-up when we wrote White Chicks. I almost feel like that came after.
Right.
Yeah. And then, he loved it, too.
Yeah, he fell in love with it, and that's how that started.
Okay.
And then it fell apart, and I saw his audition tape. It was pretty good. But then I saw Mike Epps, because Mike Epps and I are friends, too. And I remember Mike said, oh, they're gonna have me do it. And I kept saying, I don't see it. So he was like, no, I can do it. I was like, Mike, I don't see it. And he sent me a video of him when he was on stage, I think, in North Carolina doing stand-up. And he did his Richard Pryor impression. It was like 40 seconds of it. And it was fucking phenomenal.
Oh.
Like, it was fucking to where I said, if you do the work. And at that time, Lee, the guy that did Empire, Lee Daniels was going to direct it.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, dude, if you do the work, you're going to fucking get an Oscar.
Mm-mm.
Because it was the nuances and stuff he was doing.
Yeah.
It was the little shit he was doing with Richard. And again, it's the script. It cannot get the script right. So, and Jennifer, I'm working with her actually on a project. We're doing an animated series based on Richard Pryor's character, Mudbone.
Mm.
So, and I work with Jennifer. Jennifer's just very protective of Richard, and as she should be, of, you know, his image and how it's out there. She's not a bad person. Everybody makes act like she's tough, but anytime a woman stands her ground, it's like, oh, she's a bitch. And she's not a bitch. She's tough.
Right.
But I like
her.
And
it's hard when you're like the stepmother and all that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, and I don't have all the information that goes super deep into it, but just from my interactions with her, she's fucking dope. She's cool as shit. But they just, you know, Kenya is working. He had to go and rewrite the script. He's been rewriting the script for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
That's going to be amazing.
That's going to be amazing. Yeah. I don't know what's going
on. But I get it, why something like that, that's like such a phenomenal character that affected so many people in entertainment of all walks of life.
Mm-hmm.
And he has such an, like, you do not want to screw this up. Because the first one, there hasn't been, you know.
I don't know how you do it in an hour.
Yeah.
Honestly, because he's such a complicated person from the time he was a kid to his death. I don't know how you squeeze all that in an hour.
Or two. You mean like a regular movie?
Yeah, an hour or two. Yeah, two-hour movie. I just don't know how you do that.
Well, that's what I kind of like about what's happening now, like with True Story and in Netflix, that you can kind of have these short, limited series, longer movie kind of things.
We were the guinea pig for Netflix because we did the first episode was an hour.
Uh-huh.
The rest of the episodes are 30 minutes or less.
Oh, okay.
So they never done dramas in a half-hour format. We were the kind of first show to do
dramas.
And so I remember sitting in the writer's room going, because, you know, structure and rhythm and pacing and all this kind of stuff that goes into storytelling. We go, how the fuck are we going to do this in 28 minutes? Like, and that was the interesting part of doing that.
Yeah.
Doing that series. But we figured it out.
So...
Okay,
so I love that he like kind of came up with this character of himself instead of Kevin, it's Kid.
It's the Kid, yeah.
But he's, you know, successful, and knowing his whole life and seeing the documentary about the aftermath of when he got caught for cheating on his second wife and she forgave him, and how he kind of somewhat had some anger towards the people that were surrounding him, and then the person that tried to blackmail him and everything. Knowing all that also makes this extra enjoyable and juicy.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I just, it's like to come up, and then all the twists. And one of the twists I love is there's a fan that...
Gene, yeah.
How did you guys create this fan? Because I thought that was... so realistic from someone that fortunately has some fans and where you're kind of like where a fan almost feels like they're so in awe of you, but then it's like weird, like, shit, how much do I owe this person? Like, it was very juicy.
It was a lot of different incarnations how we came up. But one of them was I was speaking about I was on a trip, and I at the time it was long since I did weeds, but I ran into these ladies we were on this trip with. We went to Cuba, and it was just this group thing. And so we were stuck in the airport, and so we were just talking. you know, getting to know each other. And I told her, hey, I wrote for Weeds. And she told me this really wonderful story about her friend who was struggling with breast cancer. And the thing that got her through chemo was Weeds. And how, and like, she kind of fanned out. And I'm like, I'm just a fucking writer trying to get on the plane. Like, I'm, you know, I'm looking like a bum and shit. But she wanted pictures and all this stuff because of how Weeds helped her friend get through cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So we were just talking about things like that. Again, when you're in a writer's room, you're sharing, right? So it just became about taking that kind of storyline and kind of, you know, building it up, and that became who Gene was. Gene was a guy who loved a kid because, I think it's in the story, like a family was dying of cancer.
Yeah, his sister. Yeah, and that was the only thing that she had to look forward to was listening to his
stuff. Listening to a kid and laughing. So, that, again, that came from the story we was talking about, right?
Yeah.
And so that's how Gene started to formulate. And then as we started to talk about it, you know, we was thinking, like, how do we use Gene?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because Wesley's such a rotten piece of shit in the...
Wesley plays his older brother that just, like, that whole thing where, like, and then he's got this manager that has that has, like, a former eating disorder because, and the fact that he calls his therapist and he's like, oh, my God, kids, I mean... That's the other part of when you're in that circle with a superstar, like, you know, so he has like a couple of people with him, the manager, the writer, who's a female writer, a trainer slash bodyguard.
Yep.
And, you know, they travel around and everything. And the manager, you know, is like, oh, my God, he, you know, he's stressing me out again. Mm-hmm. And it's just. It is a weird thing because you always think like, oh, a manager is the bad guy or he's the piece of shit. And it's like, well, the manager. You know, you are his whole livelihood too. So it's like you worry about, you know, this person getting in trouble, hanging out with the wrong person, getting himself hurt, or, you know, it was very interesting to see each part. And then you had the female writer comedian and, you know, and she's like, well, I have this other opportunity. And the manager's just like, so just do it and don't tell. And I was in that same position when I was working on, my show to Chelsea lately, one of the writers was like, I'm supposed to do this pilot, you know, or test for this pilot, but I got to tell them. Right. And I'm like, why do you have to, you know? And I'm like, why don't you just see? And then if you get it, then go, hey, like it was just offered to me or whatever, you know? And, you know, I was like, no. And then they were like, well, that makes us feel like you don't really want to be here. And exactly what I predicted happened.
Yep.
And then I was stuck in a room by myself for the next 6 months. And I'm like, they never even replaced you. I just had to do double work. Like, I told you, just keep your fucking mouth shut. You know? Because I'm like, you could have done the pilot and the pilot didn't go. So, like, you would have just been gone for a week. We could have lived without.
Yep.
But it was all like, it was just so, I appreciate all that Hollywood, like, stuff that I think... To me, you know, I loved, but obviously it's the top 10 show on Netflix, so everybody else is loving it.
We're number one.
Oh, you're number one now.
We're number one.
Better than Selling Sunset?
Yeah, Selling Sunset is number two.
Murdering Comedians and Sexy White Realtors, neck and neck. Yeah, yeah. People like stories about Hollywood. Yeah. You know, is it, yeah.
And Kevin, you know, here's the great thing about Kevin. Kevin was an open book.
Yes.
He came and sat with us a couple of times, and he just laid it all out. And what was brilliant about it was he knew, like, for me, I was like, you know, people are going to think this is your life. He goes, well, it is. And so
There's elements of it.
And I thought, wow, that's really smart because it's a built-in curiosity already in the story.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
You know what I mean? And so... even if you're not going to get any salacious real details about it, there's a curiosity about, is this how he really lives? Is this what really goes on behind the scenes? You know, and so it brought that element into it. And then Wesley Snipes, who I just thought just fucking rocked.
Yeah, he's so believable in the relationship and everything. And I was also
he rocked.
I also think with Kevin, I think he came up with the idea kind of like, okay, shit's gotten out of hand, but what if it really got out of hand?
Yeah.
And I, being someone that is obsessed, and the Juicy Scoopers are obsessed with true crime as well, and I've watched a million Datelines and stuff, and I'm always like, what would I do if I woke up and my husband was dead next to me? It's a giant body. I know I didn't kill him, but I did really get drunk last night. Like, I love stuff like that. Like, what would you do?
Yeah.
Like, you're not a bad person. You didn't really mean it.
Right.
But you don't want to end your life, and you don't want to go straight to the police. And, like, can we just put this away, and I'll do some Christian service after? I don't know. Like, I just, like what? And so I love that. And then it just, of course, gets worse and worse and pile on and all that of that. And it's just, it was... But then there's still some, like, light, funny elements of it that, you know, you find yourself, like, laughing at.
Oh, good.
Yeah, yeah.
We threw some jokes in there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we try to lighten it up a little bit. But, he, you know, was interesting. We're all come from Hollywood. Like, even the Billy character was based on another writer.
Yeah.
I want to say she was the influence for the character, which was Glenda, who works for Heartbeat.
Oh, okay.
Right? She was the only woman there, like, writing jokes and stuff like that, right? And so... There was parts of her just like, you know, I want to do this and I want to do that and I can't. I'm stuck here. So he was like, well, let's use that shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we were just throwing everything that was on the table. We used. And Charles was so fucking masterful at taking all these puzzle pieces and just putting them together, you know. And we, for the first 2 weeks, we didn't do shit but talk.
Yeah.
We like literally didn't do anything but talk. We would go in there and just hang out, eat lunch, shoot the shit. Sometimes we'll put
That's my favorite kind of writer meeting.
Isn't it the
just,
best?
Where you're just ordering food.
Ordering food. What are we getting today? Like, that's 2 hours of conversation. You going to eat that?
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
You know what I'm thinking? Greek. We had Greek last week. Let's get a... You know, so that's the fun part. And then just talking.
Yeah.
About life, people's careers, things that happened in Hollywood. Remember, Kevin had the car accident.
Right.
Right? And so... This didn't happen, but I was like, what if, we was playing a what if game, right, one day. And I was like, what if Kevin, like, it was a different story. Like, what if he was really, like, drunk and he switched seats or something like that.
Yes.
Like, all that kind of shit. So you're talking about the possibilities and then how celebrities get away with it.
Yes.
How celebrities are being forgiven for it. Mm-hmm. So you throw all of that stuff out on the table and then you start, That's good. And then, you know, we're writers. We start building on stuff. Next thing you know, you got episode one. Next thing you know, you got episode two, then three, then four. The twists and turns was probably the most interesting and hardest part of it, because you got to go, okay, we're writers. We know if we do this, you kind of see that coming.
Yes.
How do we cover that up and make it like this? That was the tough but fun part of it, figuring that part out. How to keep people on their toes. And we wanted to create a real legitimate thriller with black people in it. Like, I don't feel like, it's always like, when you saw black thrillers, it's always like the abusive husband or the abusive boyfriend that don't want to let the girl go and all
you
that
mean, kind of, like what?
Like Beyonce and Idris Elba.
I remember that one. That was Beyonce, you know, and then was it, it was kind of like a reversal of... Fatal Attraction.
Yeah, yeah. It's always that kind of...
I kind of liked it, though.
No, I'm not knocking it. It's not a knock.
I saw that one in the movie theater.
Yeah, I'm not knocking. I'm just saying, like, that is usually, like, there's a lane of thrillers that we normally do that's kind of like, okay, I'm watching it because I like the people in it.
Yes.
There's some tawdriness to it. Fine.
Yeah.
But we's like, what do you do? How do we do one where we keep people on the edge of their seat?
And I think it was great, you know? Is we haven't seen that.
Right.
With comedy, like you've seen it with like the musician brother or the band and the one guy wants to leave and like that whole biopic of like drug abuse and everything. We've never seen the comedy thing of like where, you know, the older brother like always thought he was probably funny too, you know, and Kevin is still like having the guilt and like trying to get the brother's career going with the different restaurants. And it's like. Yeah, I'm really rich, but how long do I have to fucking carry this person? But I also do still love his company.
Right.
Like, he still liked him around. He still wanted to have the fun. But it was just an exhausting relationship.
It's in a way a survivor's remorse.
Yes.
Except with a career, right?
Yeah.
So I was able to create success and get out of my situation. But my sibling can't do that.
Yeah.
So... I don't want to feel like I made this money. I'm like, fuck you. So I got it. When he asked for money, I got to be like, all right, what's it for this time?
And yes.
Give it to him because you don't want to be the asshole brother. But at the same time, you know, giving him money is not going to make that situation better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So you always stuck between the loyalty of family versus the common sense of business and entertainment.
Right. And it's so, never going to be enough.
It's never going to be enough. And so basically, they're blackmailing you for being successful.
Yes.
Right? And for you getting out, you got it's the thing we all deal with, but particularly black people, because they always like, when you become successful, you got to take the hood with you. There's a lot of fucking people in the hood.
I remember, wait, hold on. I'm just like blanking on his neck, on his name. Wait, who was the other comedian that was on 30 Rock that got in the horrible bus act, the horrible accident too? Hold on.
On 30 Rock?
30 Rock. Yeah, he was on SNL and 30 Rock. Why is the name escaping me? The black guy. He's like, oh my God. Will you look up 30 Rock cast?
Oh, Tracy Morgan.
Tracy Morgan, I remember seeing an interview and he's like, when he got like the SNL contract or whatever, and he was like leaving his hood or his neighborhood or whatever you want to call it, he said, like, we had to leave. We left in the middle of the night. Like, we didn't tell anybody that I got this deal.
Yeah.
I didn't want to hear about it.
Yeah.
And so what is that where it's like they're not happy? They want to claim you, but then they're not happy for you because they're jealous.
I think it's human nature. I think it's, it's you're getting out. Take me with you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And what they don't understand is you can't take everybody with you.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's not ready for that ascension. Those actually, you have to start cutting people off for you to rise higher.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And everybody can't come. That's just what it is. And but we're also taught that you don't leave people behind. You know what I mean? And so it's this weird. It's this weird thing that you're like that they're indoctrinating you that you're responsible for other people's happiness.
So did you deal with that?
I left motherfuckers. I don't deal with people.
So when did it start to happen for you? Like,
I think it was the second show I worked on when I did Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Okay.
Right? And so I had to write a script. And everybody kept coming to my house. All times of night, knocking on my door.
Just friends, not other writers.
Just friends want to hang out. Hey, I got some girls. I got this. And I'm like, dude, I got to work.
Yeah.
And they didn't care about the work. They only cared about what happens after you get the check.
Yeah.
That's all they cared about.
Where are we going?
What
parties?
And then it was like you would go out and like, Devon got it. And it's like, wait, what the fuck you mean I got
the
it?
The bill, you mean 30, the check. Yeah.
Yeah, the check. And it's like, it's 30 people. What do you mean I got it? I don't even know half you motherfuckers. Like, I don't have shit. Like, what are you talking about? And so it got to a point where, you know.
Hollywood's got it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I heard that shit. I was Hollywood for a long time.
Where did you grow up?
South Central.
Okay.
So, you know, yeah, I'm at TGI at Friday. Yeah, I could have picked up the bill. But still. It was the assumption.
Hey, you know what? Those stuffed potato skins don't buy themselves.
They fucking rock, though.
No. But they're not free.
They're not free. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You had four of them. You had four separate baskets of them. I don't even know her. So it just got to a point where you're like, okay, I know they're happy for my success, but there's an expectation because we're friends or I know you or we're cousins or whatever that I now have to support you. You know what I mean? Like, why would you leave me behind? My rent's due. And it's like, well, I don't live there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, your rent was due before I became successful.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's this expectation. I think that's what wears on you. It's the expectation of you having to support these people.
Yeah.
And no one asks you. No one comes and have that conversation with you like, hey, Heather, you mind, you know, now that you're successful, you and I hang out and you give me money. Like, they don't have, they just assume.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you got some money, we have some money.
Mm-hmm.
Even with my own parents.
So what happened with your parents?
They just expected shit.
And that was then put a strain on the relationship.
No, but it's different because they're my parents.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I had to tell my mom to slow down. Like, I remember I was going to borrow a car. And I said, you need another car, Mom. And I remember at this time, all she wanted was a Honda, one of those new Honda Accords, because they were nice and this, and the third. So I said, okay, I'm going to buy you a Honda. I said, if you want a car, I'll buy the car. Now that I said I was going to buy the car, she started looking at Mercedes. The shit went up. I said, wait a minute. What happened to the fucking Honda? She said, well, if you're going to buy it. I said I was going to buy the Honda. I said, you ain't getting no Mercedes. I don't have a Mercedes.
Right.
You know, it was just, again, the expectation. And it's also people don't understand how any of this shit works.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, I have people think I'm a millionaire. Oh, you know, tens and tens of minutes. Like, nah, I do okay. I'm fine. but I got to pay taxes. I got to do this. I got to do that. Like, I'm not a, not a.
Well, I think that's interesting now what they are doing now with athletes at the college level and on, where they are teaching them more financial classes and they're having real. Well, some of these consultants were the, you know, taking advantage of them too, but getting the right people to
manage
say,
your money.
Hey, like, you cannot help everybody.
Right.
And because you're not going to be playing football at, you know, 50. Yeah. And what if you get hurt? And what if you, you know, and you got to have money to then invest in other businesses that will take you. And so it's like, it's so sad when you like see that like someone had everything and then they don't have anything. And because they were just living that life and people expected it.
And that's why I love the conversation between Kid and Calvin when he went off on him. And he goes, he asked for the money, and he was like, Kid said, when has any of this shit ever worked? When have you, when have I ever got any return on my investment with you? Like, ever. Like, you, like, and it was just a great conversation for two brothers to have. And I thought it was a real conversation, and that added to part of his frustration with the scenario. Every, you know, I'm not going to give it away, but when he finally, you know, reacts, the great line is, you're trying to take money from me. Everybody's trying to take money from me. Like, I'm just a soft motherfucker. I'm just everybody's ATM. Nobody gives a fuck. And that's how you feel. You don't feel like you're a person anymore. You're just a walking ATM machine.
Yes.
And nobody cares. And then, like, Hammer, who I knew, I remember he lost all his money. And he lost his money giving his money to
Hammer.
Family
and
all of this kind of stuff. He's fine now. But when he lost that $30, $40 million, people made fun of him.
Yeah.
So you're damned if you do.
Yeah, here you're generous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you lose it because you're supporting all these different people, and now those same people are going, aha, you don't know how to fucking manage your money.
And then how hurtful to the person that everyone was coming over then, and now no one's coming over now, and you're like, oh my God, what the, you know, what the hell?
What the fuck, right? And so you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. So you end up hiding for the most part. You know, from people.
And then that's sad too, because you want to keep your old friends.
You want people around that kind of grew up with you.
Yes.
You want to bring them along. Go, hey, look what's happening. Come enjoy some of this shit. But then it just becomes.
But then they get together and talk behind your back.
It's a fucking crazy thing. That's why this show was so interesting to do, because it tapped into all of those things as a star
that I just feel has never been really portrayed.
Don't even talk about it. And I thought that was really, really cool about it. Again, Charles Murray, man, he did his thing.
And the other part is when the brother is like kind of pissing on his latest big hit,
right?
Kind of shitting on it. And it's like, oh, I'm sorry. What movie have you done this year?
Yeah. My movie's making $1 billion. That was the line.
Like I watched this podcast with two siblings of two very successful comics, and someone sent it to me, and they're like, you have to see this. And they were both shitting on their siblings that did a movie together. And they're both like, oh, it only made, you know, 14 million or something. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. Did either one of you write or direct or finish a movie that actually got put out?
Right.
You're now criticizing, like, and then the other girl goes, oh, this is when she had three shows. And of course, they've all been canceled. I'm sorry, she had three shows. Can we just talk about the fact that she had three shows? Like, oh my God, shut up.
And so imagine what that does to your psyche.
Yeah.
Being in that situation, you know, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. Then you start looking at people like, my sister or my brother really don't give a fuck about me.
Mm.
That's even hurtful. Like, I grew up with you. I was in the same bedroom with you. We had to share the same toothbrush. We were so poor. Like, whatever that scenario is, and now that same person is shitting on you.
Yeah.
And now you have to deal with that loss, because it's a loss.
And then when you think that you might be able to, like, actually have your sibling help you and be with you and also have a little something of their own.
Right.
Sometimes it works out. Like, I want to say, like, I think Amy Schumer and her sister are great partners, and they seem to still work out. But then you look at Dane Cook and his brother.
Yeah.
Not the same.
Not the same.
So it's like, it's unfortunate because it might work out.
Right.
You know, but it also, for so many people, it doesn't for all the reasons you said.
Yeah. That was digging into the psychology of that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It wasn't just about a guy being used. It's all the things. And we had backstory that we didn't even get to use in the actual show that kind of really set up their relationship and that sort of thing and how they grew up and how they end up being where they are. You know, we talked about it a little bit where Carlton was had a scholarship to play for Temple and was out on the block and fucked it up. Mm-hmm. So he's carrying that guilt of fucking it up. And so you watch your brother be successful, and so you're taking and projecting your failures onto him and making your failures his responsibility.
And I also think that's extra juicy because if you had two kids in the neighborhood and one has this amazing athletic ability and one is kind of short for the family, as the parents, you probably put this all your energy in the eldest star child. He's the one that's going to make it. Meanwhile, this one that didn't have the athletic ability had to use his brain, and he becomes successful not at 18, but at 28 or whatever.
Yeah.
That I wish you would have had an episode about that.
You know what? We talked about it.
That's juicy.
We talked about it because I had a similar situation with my brother, right? So I was athletic, and I got a scholarship playing football. I wasn't super good, but I got one.
To where?
Cal State Northridge.
Mm-hmm.
But my brother was super smart, straight-A student. To this day, just never had a B in his life, right? And so my parents like, oh, he's going to be the one. He's going to get the degrees. He's this. And then, hi, Devon. And everybody, you know, it was that situation, right? And then, I lost my scholarship because I got hurt. And I fell into this TV thing. And I remember I never told my parents I changed my major because I was an engineering major.
Yes.
Never told my parents that I changed my major in my sophomore year to radio, television, and film. I'm at graduation. And this is how they found out was graduation day.
Yeah.
That I changed my major.
They're like, why are we in this section?
So they were sitting over there, and as God would have it, of course, they're in the stands, but I'm close enough to see my parents.
Yes.
And so they sent a, graduating class of 1991, engineering program, engineer department, please stand up. They're on the other side of the auditorium. They stand up, and I remember my dad looking, going, what's going on? I just go, hold on a second. So then when it was like with the graduating class of 1991 radio, television, film stand-up, I stood up. He literally did this, right? Put his head down.
This child's never going to make a dollar.
Never going to make a dollar, right?
This fucking engineering, dude, that is a solid career.
That's a solid career. He goes, you got a degree watching television? I was like, no, Dad, that's not what it is, right? But he really didn't think I was going to make it.
Yeah.
To the point where, of course, I don't have a job, so I'm back at my parents' house, I'm interning, and he would leave applications on my bed every other day. Just fill this one out, son. You know? And then one day, it was a great job. He said, it's an application for the city. I remember this to the day. You get $2,500 a week. You get your own truck, and they can't fire you. Just fill it out. And I said, if I take that job, that means I don't believe in myself.
Because that is a good payment.
It was good.
Yeah.
And he was happy too. Oh, you get your own truck. He was really happy about the truck. I don't fucking know why. You get your own truck. I was like, And I said, if I take that job, I don't believe in myself.
Right.
And he never did it again after that. He stopped. And literally, and this is how the universe works, kids. If you believe in yourself and you claim it, 2 weeks later, I'm writing on a show called Out All Night.
That is great.
Yeah, true story. And so we talked. True story. Yeah. So we talked about that as again part of that element of like you said, you're gonna focus, and that was part of the backstory where they did focus on Carlton. Carlton was the guy that was gonna get, because you focus on the kid you think gonna get you out the hood and get you the mink coat and the house and all that shit. Oh, you gonna be the one? You the lottery ticket? I'm going with you.
Yeah.
You know, everybody else can come along too, but you sort of lead the other kids off to the side. Which forces those other kids that you leave to the side, I think, to either excel way more or really spiral down, right? And for Carlton, I think he was on, I always say he was in the middle. He didn't quite excel, he didn't quite spiral, but he was on the fringe of doing one or the other.
Yeah.
And all it took was a move left or a move right, and he's going to be either up or down. And it was the kid's job, I think, by giving him money is to keep him from failing and wanting to succeed. Because he knew if Carlton didn't have his own thing, this guy's going to always be in my fucking pocket. He's always going to be a thorn in my side. He's always going to resent me. And so that's why he gave the money. That's why he gave the money. That's why he gave the money. And so it was a really great exploration into those types of relationships that we don't talk about. You know,
I remember with Keenan, he was an engineer major.
Yeah.
He actually, I believe, from what I recall the story, he didn't finish. He dropped out the last year to pursue stand up.
Yep.
And his mother was absolutely furious. But then Marlon told me, by the time Marlon and Sean were the two babies yes. of the family, they had one of those families where there's a bit of a break between like the yeah. eight and the two. Like then yeah. I have a couple Catholic families like that where then right. you get knocked up with the one more and you're like, well, we can't leave this one alone.
So yeah, you're like, give him a partner.
Yeah. By that time, then Marlon was like, you know, going to apply to college or whatever. And she's like, no, you go to L.A. with your brother. Yep. What are you going to do? Like, then her, and he's like, God, I would have loved to have had that support. Like, yeah. they were just furious because he was the smart kid.
Yeah. Marlon was a pretty yeah. genius kid, man.
Yeah, but yeah. Keenan was the smart, straight-laced, mm-hmm. kind of nerdy kid.
Yeah.
You know, that, like, loved comedy, but also use that engineering mind to, he would always say, the math of the joke.
The math.
The math of the joke. The math of the joke.
Yeah.
And when people say, oh, you can't learn comedy, I'm like, no, you can.
Yeah.
You got to have, look, if you've never made someone laugh mm-hmm. at a cocktail party or told a great story, right. don't pursue it. But right. if you have, there's definitely classes in, you know, college and things in stand-up that can get you to understand why something works.
It has to be in you too, though.
That's what I'm saying. You have to be in you.
You have to constantly want to look for the funny in the situation.
And observe, yeah.
And observe and want to make someone laugh. You can't mm-hmm. just go, hey, comedy seems like a good job. I'll yeah. try that. It's like right. that you're not going to fucking make it.
Right.
You're not going to make it. But if you're like my 10-year-old, right now, he doesn't know it, but he's a comedian. He sees the humor in every fucking thing.
So my 19-year-old is like that, too. Yeah.
And no matter what it is, no matter how dark it is, he'll find the humor in it. And you go, and some of it is pretty fucking clever. And I'm like, okay, brother, all right. You know?
Some of it, I'm like, that is really funny, but you don't say that outside
yeah, yeah,
the house.
Don't, yeah, yeah, yeah. That stays here.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Matter of fact, can I use that?
Yeah. No, they've literally seen me write shit down uh-huh. in my notes of my comedy. And right. they're like, can you stop stealing my stuff? I go, when you're ready to get on stage, I won't steal it. But right. until now, you say you don't want to. You say I can't film you saying it.
Right.
And I can't. Then how do you think that we're paying for this house?
Right.
Give me it.
Give me the jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to contribute. You got to yeah. do your chores and give me jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like my oldest, he wants to go to film school. He wants to be a director. My 16-year-old is a writer. He already wrote 2 pilots.
Oh, wow.
And then my 10-year-old is an athletic guy. He's like, I don't want to do that. But out of all my kids, he understands story better than anybody.
Yeah.
Like, he understands it, how it right. works, how it's supposed to feel. Like, he might not have the terminology.
Yes.
But he understands. He knows how to pitch.
Yeah.
He doesn't know that. Like, I can walk in the middle of a movie that he's watching. I go, what's this movie about? He will pause it, and he will pitch the movie to me.
Yeah.
Like, boom, start. And then this happened. This happened. By the way, when he, like all the beats. He just knows how to do it instinctively. But he hates the business. He's like, I'm never going to do that shit. That's his whole thing. I'm never going to write. And I'm like, yes, you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, you are. You're going to write. Because it's in him. I watch it. It's like, yeah, this basketball thing, we'll see where that goes. But you're going to be a writer.
Is there any, like, talk of a second something with this true story?
Well, it's an anthology. So this one, from what I, well, it might change, but the Kevin Hart part of it is done.
Okay.
And so I'll give you an exclusive. They're talking about another one. I won't say who because I don't know if it's true. Fuck it, I'll say it. It's supposed to be maybe with Melissa McCarthy.
Mm.
And she survived. She's a survivor of a plane crash. Mm. Only sole survivor of a plane crash. And I think she's a celebrity whose career was kind of on a downward spiral. But then this plane crash happens. And now she uses that to kind of build her career back up.
I love it.
I'm not. That's what we're talking about. Don't know if it's going to happen or be true. But
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the
other show I loved is like I loved as much as this is White Lotus. Did you watch?
Yes.
White Lotus. And I love that. Like, you know, then it's another thing.
Yeah.
Like, I think that is so the way to go. Not these, like, 7-series commitment things, because yeah. you're not going to get the stars you want right. to sign up for this.
Mm-hmm.
And you find, like, a really juicy kind of base like that.
Yeah.
And then you can just always come up with a different thing that's, like, kind of in that vein. I love it.
I think we stumbled on something really cool.
Yes.
Like, to do these, like, and you get, and here's the thing, by doing these little 7
yeah.
to 10 episode arcs, you can get stars.
That's what I'm saying.
You can
yeah.
get them. So, you know, you can get some. Oh, I do what? 8 weeks of this? Cool. I'll do that.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And the fact that, like, now what's crazy is the success of this one, like we're getting hit up like crazy. People want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
People want to be a part of it. So that's what's amazing about it, that we kind of set the table for these type of shows to have a place to exist. And I think it's the best. Like, you're right. It's 20,000 fucking shows on. Nobody has time to kind of dedicate themselves to, you know.
7 years of it.
7 years of the same shit.
Yeah.
Like, I like the changing of the guard. Like, if we were to do it with Melissa McCarthy, I don't know if that's going to happen. But that's a cool switch from what we just saw with the kid.
Yeah.
Right? And so, but it's still under the same umbrella of celebrity success, how to get away with shit.
Juicy.
How it's juicy and nasty and tawdry and all that other stuff. And you
and
got
it reflects
your
real life and what, like, I love that element of, like, Hollywood, you know, of just like, ooh, you need to rebuild your life. What's something sad about my life?
Right.
Oh, I never talked about this one childhood sad thing.
Right.
I've been seen as an asshole. Now let me remind everybody. Don't you remember what happened to me when I was 9?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. How did we ever think she was an asshole? She went through something really sad.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh.
Bam.
But I'm sitting back going, doesn't the world see this?
You see it.
Nobody sees it. But it's like, it's amazing. So I love then portraying it, is what I'm saying.
It's Real Housewives. We know what it is.
Yeah.
But I'm going to tune in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm going to watch. I joke. I said, it's the same show across. It's just different cities. It's the exact same fucking show.
Right.
But you tune in because the characters are slightly different than the ones from over here.
Yeah.
But it's all the same shit. Same plastic surgery, same blonde hair, same throwing the drink in the fucking face, same bad brand you trying to push, same bitch trying to sing who can't sing. It's all the same shit.
Right.
You know, and so it's, but you're so caught up in the stories and caught up in how is it going to unfold.
Right.
That's the interesting part of it. And not only that, like, even for what we did, like, for having Kevin to take this part nobody thought he would ever do, I think that opens up those doors for actors to go in, you know what? I want to be this person. I want to do a character like this.
Mm.
And get away from whatever brand or whatever thing that people are used to seeing you do. You get to actually go do something that's a little different and outside your normal sort of thing. So I love it. I hope we do a ton of these. I really do. I love it.
I love it too. Congrats.
Congrats to you, Heather.
And you're on the gram.
I'm on the gram.
So they can follow your career. Tell them.
Sure. I don't even. Here's what's funny. I don't even know
It's just your name.
It's Devon _ Shepherd, I think.
I don't know. I just typed in Devon Shepherd and you came up.
Devon Shepherd. Yeah, let's look that up. Let me see. This is so sad. My son right now be like, Dad, you're embarrassing me. Yeah, it's Devon _ Shepherd.
Okay,
I was right.
Okay, there you
right.
go.
And Instagram.
There you go. Killing Holla. Game. Killing it. All right. I love you.
I love
so
you, man. Good
seeing
to see you.
Yes. I'm so glad you came.
Yeah.
This is awesome.
I was like, oh, Heather, fuck yeah. You was like, do you remember me? I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm going to forget you. Are you kidding me? I love it. We was watching something. You're in a documentary.
The Hulu one.
Yes.
The Hulu one about Erica Jane.
Yes. Yes. Well, I didn't see it. My wife said, she said, Heather's all in that shit.
I wasn't in it that much.
That's
thank
what she
you.
Told
I'm
me.
Glad I shined. I'm glad I shined a little because I didn't feel like I really was.
But she
I
told me that.
Nice, which is all that matters.
Yeah, that's all that matters. You know?
Yeah. That's awesome.